Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Plains on the Prairie podcast. I'm Max.
And I'm Sam.
And we are coming back at you with another World War II fighter ace from Minnesota.
Yeah.
Yeah, this one, I researched him even before we did this episode, but it's a really interesting story about this guy and a very famous squadron that I know a lot of our listeners that have, you know, a passion for World War II, will recognize, or will at least have a mental picture of the squadron immediately when we say it. Before we get into it, Sam, you were doing some research last night about some fighter aces, again, from Minnesota. You just want to talk about that a little bit? Because it gave me a chuckle when we were talking about it before we started recording.
Yeah, I went down a rabbit hole. It's so my job, as those of you know, I'm a pilot, so we had a pretty good snow event yesterday. Couldn't really get to our airports that we wanted to get to, so had the day off. So I was like, well, had the day off. We're talking about, you know, further weeks for this podcast. I was like, well, let's dig around. I found 9 aces yesterday in about 2 hours. Gosh. So basically I'm going top down from the alphabet, looking up people who don't have like dedicated Wikipedia pages or easily navigable pages. So I'm basically looking up their like unit citations and seeing where they're from and figuring all that out, and found 9, all from like different theaters. Yeah. So super, like, got Guadalcanal guy, got an Eagle Squadron guy, got some Mediterranean CBI. It's just,
that's what I love to hear.
Yeah,
and, so, you know, that I think goes to show, you know, we love researching here. That's something that I think has made this podcast what it is since day one.
Exactly.
Whether that was, you know, when we visited static display aircraft, mm-hmm. or these ace pilots, you know, that's something that we take very seriously. So I love to hear that. Unfortunately, I had to work.
One of us had to work.
Yeah. I didn't quite get the research as much as I would like to. But like I did mention, I was very interested because I only found out about this guy when I was creating the North Dakota Air National Guard exhibit earlier this year. And you might be saying, but this is the Minnesota Aces series. How does he tie into North Dakota? Well, we will tell you. You're about to find out. So, unfortunately, you know, we're kind of starting to sound like a broken record here, but really could not find a whole lot about our pilot. We should mention his name was William J. Stangel. I think we said Stangel, so we'll do Stangel for the episode. But he was born on December 1st, 1914 in Thief River Falls, Minnesota. So kind of, if you're local to the region, kind of up near, I'd say,
like, just northwest Minnesota.
Yeah.
It's kind of north of Crookston.
Right. Kind of, I'd say probably closer to Grand Forks than it is to us, I'd assume.
Yeah, it's not. Kind of about 40 miles east of Grand Forks.
Gotcha. Selfless plug, I know we're on a podcast episode, but did we ever cover the A4 Skyhawk that's up there?
We have not yet, but we need to.
We definitely need to. William attended college in Moorhead, which is right across the river from Fargo here. Although we can't confirm, it's likely he attended Concordia. I think that was by far the bigger college back in the mm-hmm. 1930s and 40s. And then after that, you know, with the war, I think the war had already broken out. No, it hadn't. He joined the Royal Canadian Air Force on June 19th, 1941, and graduated as part of Course 44 section at our Royal Canadian Air Force Station, Dunville, in Ontario, Canada. You know, it's kind of the norm for these northern guys to go up to Canada to, you know, get into the fight.
Yep, early on. We had done what he was, Army.
Yeah, that's true.
But then, because he couldn't get accepted to the Air Force, and then we had a couple back, you know, during the North Dakota series as well, so it's a little bit of a theme.
Absolutely. And after his training was completed, he was assigned to number 559 Squadron in the Royal Air Force in August of 1942. And with the United States Army Air Force getting into the fray, he was then transferred to the U.S. Army Air Force in October of 1942 and was commissioned as a second lieutenant and attached to 8th Fighter Command as an instructor. So, you know, even though he was with the British and the Canadians, sounds like he really didn't see all that much combat other than just being, you know, a training pilot for some of the new guys coming in.
Yeah. A lot of these, you know, some people went fresh out of, you know, there's transfer to instructors. They kind of saw his experience, even though it wasn't, you know, super long. You know, he was there for 2 months over, or, you know, posted to a squadron for 2 months before he transferred. So they kind of saw, oh, he had a little experience.
Right.
And that's just kind of how it went.
Cool. All right. Well, he was then assigned to the 328th Fighter Squadron of the famed 352nd Fighter Group. Many of you might recognize the squadron by their nickname, the Blue-Nosed Bastards of Botany, in August of 1944. So we don't have to really paint a picture, but their Mustangs had like a beautiful dark blue
yep.
Nose job. It just, oh my gosh, chef's kiss.
Yes, there we go.
so we said he was assigned in August of 1944, and he was assigned the aircraft, a P-51D Mustang, serial number 44-14015, nicknamed Stinky 2. Now, during my research, I couldn't quite find anything about, you know, Stinky 1 or, you know, other aircraft that he might have flown prior to that. But we do know, obviously, that pilots, even if their name was on a plane, mm-hmm. they didn't always fly.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, you know, Stinky 1 might have been another Mustang that had been lost in an accident or a completely different airplane altogether. He scored, on November 2nd, 1944, while on a mission en route to Merseburg, he scored 2.5 victories and 2 full victories, all on BF-109s. And then scored 2 more victories on Christmas Day, 1944, over Koblenz, forgive my pronunciation, both of those also being BF-109s. So, you know, staying pretty busy, honestly.
Yeah, well, and that's all his kills.
Really?
He got 5 in a span of a month, or a month and a half, I guess. So, those of you know, December 25th, 1944, that time frame is pretty important to World War II history, especially on the Western Front.
Absolutely. And I should also mention, wasn't George Preddy the commander of the 350... Yeah, he was the commander of the 352nd Fighter Group, was actually killed
on that day
by friendly fire.
And
so,
those of you who followed the podcast, also Don Emerson mm-hmm. Was shot down that day too.
Yeah, wow.
So,
busy
day. I mean, it was the Battle of Bulge. The weather finally started to break mm-hmm. at this point, and that's why you're seeing, you know, action. You know, Emerson was flying, Preddy was flying. I mean, he had a lot going on.
And you also have to remember, you know, when you read about George Preddy's unfortunate shoot down, you have to remember that, you know, for those gunners on the ground, for the longest time, it was, you know, just German planes that they were seeing. So when the weather finally broke and they didn't have confirmation, they had itchy trigger fingers.
Oh, yeah.
And I can't remember. I've seen or I've read sources that say that Preddy was actually tailing another BF-109.
Mm-hmm.
And the gunners...
That's what they say in his biography.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Unfortunately. Yeah. But, so Stangel ended the war with, what, 5 victories?
5 victories total. Yep.
Wow. So
those 2 halves. But that was, two busy days.
Absolutely.
So
he was transferred then to the 352nd Fighter Group headquarters in March of 1945, just at the end of the war, and served as an air inspector with the group until September of 1945. Now, this is kind of where it gets a little confusing. Mm-hmm. So my guess is that, you know, he was still assigned in Germany for occupational duties. And, you know, something that's kind of interesting is when you read about... like post-war occupation squadrons, like all the, you know, maybe I'm going off of an incorrect source here, but were all the squadrons still painted up in their wartime markings?
Definitely, yeah. If the group was still active, they still had their markings. So, you know, as much as anybody, the colors of the Air Force, I guess. I mean, yeah, they kind of stayed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you had. Until Southeast Asia,
yeah.
Everything was colorful, right?
Oh, amazing.
It was back to the pre-war, but I mean, the Air Force, Army Air Force was a pretty colorful bunch, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Absolutely. So, he served as an air inspector in Germany from September 1945 until December of 1948, and his final assignments were as an air inspector at Craig Air Force Base in Alabama, which I believe has since closed, and his final assignment was also as an inspector at Kelly Air Force Base until his retirement from active duty in April of 1950. So this is where we make the connection with North Dakota. Yep. So obviously post-World War II, you have a lot of these these fighter squadrons that were disbanded, and obviously the Cold War was, you know, very real looming, at this point. And what does the Air Force do? They decide, hey, we have a lot of these, you know, wartime pilots that got out of the service. We have a need for continental air defense. So what do? They start assigning World War II lineages to, you know, fighter squadrons that might have been attached to previous Army National Guard units. I know the Minnesota Army National Guard had a squadron, quite a few others, but North Dakota was one of the squadrons that was activated after the war in 1947. And interestingly, William J. Stangl delivered the first, I think by then would have been the F-51D Mustang, to Fargo, North Dakota for the North Dakota Air National Guard on February 21st, 1947.
Really?
Yeah. I thought that was kind of unique. Obviously, we mentioned earlier that Stangl had time living in Moorhead, which, if you are familiar with the area, is right across the river.
Right.
So my assumption is, yes, you know, maybe he was an inspector in Germany, but this might have been his chance to come home. You know, February 21st, you know, maybe that was a time off, unfortunately.
That could have been leave. Yeah.
We'll unfortunately never know. But, yeah, he delivered that first Mustang from Kelly Field, actually.
Really?
So there's kind of that interesting connection. So, yeah, he retired from active duty in April of 1950, and we couldn't find anything if he stayed in the reserves or anything like that. Unfortunately, Stangl passed away at a fairly young age, January 3rd, 1974, at the age of 59. Yeah. Unfortunate, but there's one more thing we should cover about him. Stangl really got around.
He liked the ladies.
Yes, we found an article that talked about his escapades. He loved the opposite sex, let's just say that. And I think we found that he had at least 5 children
from different mothers.
Yep. And I thought, when I was reading the article that we found, I thought it was kind of funny that all of the children had different stories about their dad from their respective mothers. One of them thought that their dad died in 1952. Another one was like, oh, you know, he left us, or he went to the war or something like that. But it sounded like, at least from some of the comments, that the families have gotten together. Like, they have a big reunion.
Yeah, well, I was just looking him up, you know, on the surface on Google, and that's kind of how I start the research. Mm-hmm. There's an ancestry tree, and that is a very, they pictured the tree growing 25 different ways, and that's what someone was saying. Well, this family tree is a weird tree, but it was really interesting.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's, I don't want to say obviously the wrong thing, but it's so cool that, you know, the family members, you know, even if they're half siblings, are in connection and, you know, like, get to know one another. I think that's really special.
Well, and not to dog him, but not all of these aces are going to be angels, you know.
Right, yeah, so we have a couple more coming up that, you know, during the wartime might have been a little...
And that's why we mostly stick to their military career and squadron, but, and all the airplane stuff.
You know, it's worth mentioning.
It is. It's entertaining.
Absolutely. So now we will move on to the history of the 352nd Fighter Group. I will say the 352nd is arguably one of, if not the most well-documented fighter groups in the entire history of the Army Air Force. We might miss something. If we do, we apologize.
Yep, and this is just kind of an on-the-surface thing. If you guys are interested, there's plenty of books. There's one by Jay Stout. I forget what it's called, but it's about the 352nd. Preddy's Diary is really good. Read that this summer. But yeah, the 352nd was constituted on September 29th, 1942. It's one of these wartime squadrons. I mean, the high number kind of tells that. and it was officially activated on October 1st of that year, initially at Mitchell Field in New York. It was made up of three squadrons, the 328th, the 486th, and 487th. So kind of weird how the numbers span a little differently. They were initially equipped with P-47B Thunderbolts and then later the D model Razorbacks.
Oh, yeah.
And they moved to RAF Botany, hence Blue Nose Bastards of Botany, on July 5th, 1943, and were assigned to the 8th Fighter Command of the 8th Air Force.
Gotcha.
And they were assigned to the 67th Fighter Wing later that year in October of 1943, and initially took part in some of the initial bomber escorts, combat air patrols, and did some air interdiction, because the P-47 is great at that.
Yeah.
Can take the punishment. One of the big operations they took part in was Big Week.
Really?
So they were a bomber escort during Big Week from February 20th to 25th of 1944. One of their last major exploits with the 47. And then they were converted to P-51B Mustangs initially.
Quick question. Did their, maybe if you know this, did their P-47s wear blue noses as well?
They did not.
They did not. Okay.
If anything, it was a blue fairing.
Gotcha.
But the Mustangs are really where it came in.
Absolutely.
So yeah, they did convert in April of 44, later on to D models throughout the year. Those of you who know much about Mustang squadrons, they kind of had half, they're kind of a transition. They eventually all transitioned to the D model towards the end of the war, but you still had one or two, you know, sitting there in the squadron. And then participated in a lot of operations in 44, late 44, including covering the Normandy landings in June, the St. Louis operations in July, and then the famed, albeit somewhat failed, Operation Market Garden in September.
Yeah, they were just super busy in that last half of 44.
Yep.
Absolutely.
And then they were attached to 1st Bombardment Division in September of 44 to cover bombers going deep into Germany. Needed that long-range escort for sure. And then in December of that year, they were attached to 9th Tactical Air Command. And eventually, the 487th Fighter Squadron, so not the one Stangel was a part of, was attached to the 9th Air Force and deployed to Osh. That sounds more.
I like that.
Osh Airfield in Belgium during the Battle of the Bulge in late 44 into early 1945. Here, the detachment was very successful in counteracting Operation Bodenplatte, which was the Luftwaffe's kind of final push.
Last ditch on the. Yeah,
the Western Front. And they shot down over 20 aircraft from JG-11 attacking Osh Airfield on January 1st of 1945.
Wow.
It sounds like the JG-11 was about 50 strong, so they shot down almost half.
Yeah. Wow.
So it was pretty impressive. And the remainder of the 352nd moved to Osh in February and then bounced around a couple different fields in Belgium in the Low Countries. And they were placed back, the entire group was placed back under the 8th Air Force.
Gotcha.
And the last major operation they supported was Operation Varsity in March of 1945, and then eventually moved back to Botany in April until VE Day on May 8th, 1945. They remained in England until November that year. And returned stateside when the squadron was inactivated.
Mm-hmm.
And then on November 10th, 1945, or I guess it wasn't really inactivated, it was more transferred.
Gotcha.
So the group kind of dispersed, the four placed under the 113th Fighter Group, and then the 486th and 487th squadrons were allocated to the District of Columbia Air National Guard, while the 328th was allocated to the Virginia National Guard. And yep. I don't know if you have anything to add on that, since you're a guru of this.
I do, actually. So this is kind of cool. I think it's the Virginia Air National Guard. Back in the day, they flew F-16s. And today they fly F-22s.
Really?
And the Virginia Air National Guard is one of those units that takes their unit pride very seriously.
Mm.
I have a slide. If you know me, you know that I collect slides.
Really?
I don't want to say the wrong date, but I think it was in honor of one anniversary of the end of the war. The Guard repainted one of their F-16s as Cripes and Mighty. They gave it a blue nose, and you know, put the signature, you know, nose art on it. It was awesome. And obviously after the end of that, they, you know, repainted it, returned it back to Virginia Air Guard markings. They also did that with the F-22. So if you go online and you search up Virginia Air National Guard, Cripes and Mighty, you can find a picture of an F-22 painted up like a blue nose bastard, of basically a blue nose bastard. It is so cool.
I bet.
You know, this kind of goes back to what we were talking about, color on planes. You know, with stealth technology being, you know, so prevalent in today's warfighting capabilities, you know, you don't see paint on jets anymore, especially, you know, frontline stealth fighters. So that's why seeing a blue nose on this F-22, and it might have just been ceremonial. Mm-hmm. That very well could be the case. But seeing that paint job come to life on an F-22, that's awesome. It was so cool. Again, if you're listening, I highly urge you, while you're not driving, to give this a Google, because I promise you won't be disappointed. I think they did it in 2007.
Really?
Yep.
Yeah. The heritage schemes, I mean, I'm with you. Modern schemes are a little, I mean, they're all the same.
Yeah.
They're not, I don't know if I'd call the planes boring or anything, mm-hmm. but the schemes are a little. So anytime there's a heritage scheme, whatever it is, it's pretty sick.
Absolutely. And I think out of all of our aces, this might be the first ace that, well, no, we're not covering George Pretty. We're not, yeah. Sorry, I was going off on a wrong thing there. But yeah, no, real, again, fascinating, very well documented unit history. You know, I had the Corgi model of Cripes and Mighty.
Yep, me too.
As a kid,
the little tiny one. Yeah, it's still in. I think it's still at my parents in their display.
I have it back home in Minnesota somewhere. It's just the blue always catches the eye.
Oh, exactly.
So now to round it out, we will go into surviving aircraft. So unfortunately, although there are quite a few surviving 352nd Fighter Group Mustang still around, one of them is not his. That being said, I actually think there is a skin for his Mustang available for either War Thunder or
there
one
is.
Of those,
yep.
You know, online shoot 'em up games. But we did find several surviving paint schemes on 352nd Mustangs. The first one is P51D44-12473. Which is painted as Moonbeam McSwine, a very famous Mustang from the 352nd. And the original serial number for Moonbeam McSwine was 44-14237. I don't know whose aircraft that was assigned to. I know it's very popular. I should have researched that and put that on my notes, but unfortunately I did not. Another P-51D, this one is owned by the Air Force Historic, or Air Force Museum Loan Program. This one that's on loan is 44-14570, is displayed at Barksdale Air Force Base's Barksdale Global Power Museum.
That
was a mouthful. Oh my gosh. Their Mustang is also depicted as Moonbeam McSwine. P-51D-44-74813 is painted as Cripes a Mighty, I think, three. There were several Cripes and Mighties.
Yep.
We won't get into the history of them in this episode, though. But the original serial number for that one was 44-14906. Probably my favorite. There actually is an original 352nd Fighter Group Mustang that still exists. It is 44-72216, nicknamed Miss Helen. Very briefly covering the history of that plane. Was assigned to the 352nd in January of 1945, and after the war was assigned to the Swedish Air Force.
Really?
Which, if you know, a lot of surviving wartime Mustangs today owe their survival, whatever you want to call it, to the Swedes as well as the Israelis, because a lot of the Swedish Mustangs were in it then, you know, maybe less than legally sold
yep.
to the Israelis during their war for independence. So this one is pretty cool in the sense that it was an original blue nose Mustang. The last one that we could find, and trust us, there are probably way more that we're forgetting. the last one that we could find is another P-51D 44-72942, nicknamed Petey the Second, which the original serial number for that was 44-14151. Wow.
That's cool. Well, and something to note is the Cripes and Mighty was at the Fargo Air Museum for, I want to say, 2 or 3 years. It was...
back in, like, 2012, right?
Yep. Yeah. Before Bob passed away, it was here for a few years. I remember when my early days at the museum, it came around 2011, 2010. Don't remember exactly, but it was here. And then I think for about a year after his passing.
Beautiful.
And did you find anything on Stangel's specific Mustang other than it was transferred to the 364th Fighter Group? I didn't find a fate for it, but yeah, just...
Likely, you know, at the end of the war, so many of those Mustangs were just ground up and crushed.
Exactly,
you know,
it's
hard to say. You know, we could have a whole episode dedicated to, you know, wartime surviving Mustangs. I know, you know, probably the most famous one in our region is Sirisu 2.
Right.
Formerly owned by Paul Elin. You know, that's the one that I always saw growing up. That was in
right.
my hometown.
And that beautiful restoration and everything.
Gosh.
Yeah.
Shout out to
Air Corps. We're going to shout them out almost every week here. Yep. But yeah, they do great work.
But yeah, no, this was a fun one. Obviously, having a previous knowledge of him helped. And, you know, he's right from
pretty
at
close.
Least your backyard. Yeah,
yeah.
Being here from Fargo. This was a cool one. And again, you know, any chance to talk about the 352nd Fire?
Oh, yeah, it's a treat.
I'm in.
Yeah.
I'm in.
Yeah.
But yeah, well, Sam, thanks for coming in. And, you know, this, again, fun episode. And,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We're glad to come back next week with another one, too.
Absolutely.
We might take a break here around the holidays or something. So we'll see how it goes and see how our time frames are. But again, this is going to be about at least a 30 episode series.
Yep.
So we're looking at. Over half a year.
Right, and we're thinking that we might, take intermittent pauses and cover.
Yeah.
I know we've mentioned Stu Bass on the episodes a couple of times. There's a couple other pilots who flew in notable missions. That's Leo, our resident podcast pup. Leo, do you have anything to say about the 352nd Fighter Group?
I think he just wants treats.
He does.
So. And to go sniff around. He really likes it here at the museum.
Me too.
He doesn't like getting holed up. But yeah, we have a lot to cover. We're probably going to do some videos here and there. It's starting to get cold, so the statics might not be... I mean, they're still fun. They might not be as fun as well.
We do have some new additions to the museum we definitely need to
Make we're going to probably get on that pretty soon.
Absolutely.
Alrighty.
Well, without further ado, thank you guys for tuning in.
Yeah, thanks guys. We'll see you.